When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you gotta be tough. You gotta be rough. You gotta shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother Dave, quicker than a horned toad, he can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a scripture faster than a Colt 45. Wanted, dead or alive, they'll be coming for you. It's the James Gang on EuroFolkRadio.com.
All right, folks, the James Gang is getting ready to round up all the Jews. All the Jews in the world, and send them to Afghanistan and maybe even Siberia, places where...
How about if we start a space program? You know how their father wants to leave the planet, right?
Yeah,
well, why
right.
don't we just send... I can think of it now. The Jews rule the moon. They finally got their own land.
Yeah, right.
But there's no oxygen. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right.
So there'll be just another pile of with no bulldozers, you see.
Right, no bulldozers.
We don't have to worry about fire either because there's no oxygen. So there could be it would be a Holocaust, but it really wouldn't be a Holocaust.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, since Matthew 13 says the tares are going to burn, there's going to be plenty of oxygen. No problem there, folks. All right, welcome to the James Gang. This is 1-to-1, February 25th, 2017. And today we're going to continue our series on the Jewish question in Germany. We've covered several aspects, including major portions of the Versailles Treaty, and how the Jews were actually flourishing in Germany leading up to World War I. They were flourishing in Germany during World War I, and they flourished in Germany in the post Versailles Treaty era. In fact, right up until, I would say, David, right up until the day that the Jews declared economic war against Germany in 1933, Germans were perfectly happy living in Germany.
And they had allowed them to come into Germany and live just like they lived. There was no ghettos. There were no ghettos, as far as I know, for Jews. They were allowed to be full citizens just like in France. But you see, when you do that, you don't know that you're going to pay a price.
Right. If you're nice to Jews, you mean.
Well, in other words, what happened after Napoleon let them out of the ghettos?
Oh, yeah. They stabbed them in the back.
What's taking place around the world?
Yeah.
I talk about it all the time. Not only did they become equal citizens in France, but then they started to do that throughout the world. And then now look what's happened. They've brought all the other sub-races like themselves and tried to make them equal with us, too.
Right, yeah.
So it has done no good to be friends with them.
No.
They don't have friends. Even their own people, they're not really friends. They don't really like each other.
Parasites have hosts, not friends. That's just the way it is, okay? But we found last week that the Jews were really quite well off. When we discussed the depravity of sexual...
Weimar Republic.
Weimar Republic. We found the Jews were in total control of that. They're the only ones making money off of that. They were the porn pushers. They were the pimps, etc., etc. They were the publishers of smut, you know. So the Jews were well off, while the German people could never really adapt to the changes brought on about by the Versailles Treaty. The Jews had no problem adapting. You know, it's like they had planned the whole thing, right?
They're chameleons. Of course, they would have no problem adapting. They're internationalists. They don't have a land of their own. They've always lived in other people's lands, and it's always our lands,
right?
For the most part,
yeah.
I'm sure some of them lived in the Sheikh in the Arab lands so that they could, you know, be treated like kings and so on and so forth. And that's a great place to hide when you're wearing those robes and the whatever they got over their heads. You know what I mean? You can't even tell who's who over there.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I mean, if there was ever a point when the German people had the Jews dead to rights and had every right to hang them all from the highest tree, was when they realized that the Balfour Declaration is what brought America into World War I and sealed Germany's fate, okay? So it was, and even though the German people and Germany as a country had treated the Jews exceptionally well, up to and including World War I, when the Jews found the opportunity to snatch Palestine away from the Arabs, from the Turks, who were the Germans' allies during World War I, the world Jewry immediately turned against Germany and then blamed Germany for World War I, which is a completely false charge. So the German people realized that the global Jewry had stabbed them in the back and reneged on all their deals and then caused Germany to suffer this tremendous humiliation because the Jews wanted Palestine. And Germany and Turkey had control over it. So there's no way to gloss this over. There's no way to make this look good. It was a total stab in the back of the German people by global Jewry to the German people who did them no wrong, did the Jews absolutely no wrong. And the Jews continued their, how should I put this, their stabbing in the back of the German people after Versailles, during the Weimar Republic, and continuously up until
today. It's still going on.
And it's still going on. Right. It's still going on. This is what people don't understand. This is what the German people don't understand, how the Jews have been treating them for over the last 100 years, which is horribly, genocidally,
you know how
brutally.
I tell people, Eli, I say, do you know that there's Jewish and German politicians in Germany that stand up in front of the newspapers and everybody else and say that the German people should end as a race? And this is a good thing that this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at you and say, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is the continuous anti-German propaganda created by the Jew. It has never stopped, you know, in spite of the fact that they know the real history. They know it was the Jews that have done the Germans dirty throughout history, never the other way around. They know this. But, of course, it's a propaganda machine. Talmudic Judaism is a propaganda machine, and they're not gonna back off their propaganda. We just have to keep exposing their lies, okay? I'm going to quickly
I wanted to say something.
All right, go ahead.
Do you mind?
No, no.
It's because of the division. It's something that, you know, I don't understand why this division is so harsh and so big. But there's one proponent. If there's one proponent that you would say that has been against Germany, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who would you say it is? Who's the biggest, like, when the Jews have divided the tribes against each other, because
right.
We don't know where the tribes. Wouldn't you think there would be some inbred loyalty to our own brothers? well, there
if
really
were,
is.
Right.
There is in points, right? But there's a certain country. Well, I'll just say it. It's England. See, because why do I say that? Because England is the main proponent here. It's Jew controlled, and you can blame it on the Jews, but English men did all these dirty deeds in the same way as what's going down in South Africa against the German Boers.
Right. Yes.
So that's what I'm trying to say. There's one division that the Jews have caused that between the tribes that is really, really out of hand. And there's no call for it. Where is the loyalty? How could you be an Englishman? I don't care if you're a Freemason or not. How could you go down there and pretend you were a Boer to try to wipe out your own brothers, German white people?
Yeah,
for who, exactly. For the Jew? For what?
Well, for money. For money, prestige, status, getting knighted, right? Yeah, the Jews have controlled the British Empire since they created the Bank of England back in 1695. And they have done the rest of Europe dirty, including Russia, including Poland, including Germany. They even France, even though France was the ally of the British most of these wars, France didn't really fare too well either, right? So what we see is the British Empire with all kinds of British royalty and British politicians and British business people making out very well in terms of war, you know, war profits, war after war after war, you know, starting with the invasion of India, the Boxer Rebellion in China, as you mentioned, the invasion of the Boers in South Africa, one invasion after another, the British sponsored by the House of Rothschild. It's just has been nothing but one gigantic evil empire since 1695. Still is.
Well, don't you think that's a little odd? I wonder what caused such a division. Because they were hungry to go to war to go kill Germans, right?
Right.
But in the U.S., the whole as they, you know, they still don't obey us till today. Well, they haven't, the government hasn't been obeying the people for the last 100 years or
right.
more than 120 years, all right, or close to it, 116, 17 years. And the American people did not want to go to war, not in the first war, nor in the second war against
right.
their brother, their German brothers.
Yeah, we had to be tricked into it. Yeah.
I mean, we did the dirty work when it came down to it, but England was hungry to do the dirty work. And that's what's kind of scary to me. Even the Russians, when they went against the Germans, they were only obeying because of the situation they were under. I don't think they really wanted to even fight the Germans, because I think if it wasn't for America, Germany would have certainly won that.
That's all
because
sure.
they knew what to do, and they knew yeah. what they were going to do, and they would have taken care of it.
Right.
So the problem is that, you know, sometime there's got to be a reason why this division is so heavy and why England, and I'm not trying to speak about my brothers in England bad. I'm just saying that something's wrong there because it extends to too many places against the Germans. You know what I mean?
Well,
when you talk about France, right, look what happened with them in France. They took off whatever it is. Eustace Mullen says they took off 6 inches off the average French man.
That's right.
So in other words, now they're all short ones. You know how they would show that
right.
In the Le Beau? You see how short Le Beau was?
Yeah.
In Hogan's Heroes, right?
Right, right.
I mean, that was a little, even that was deliberately done that way.
Right, right, for sure, for sure.
See, French men were tall just like any other Anglo-Saxon right. men.
Right, right. Well, see, here the fact that the Rothschilds, well, it wasn't the Rothschilds yet, but Jewish bankers have been in control of the British Empire since 1695. And, of course, they had the a war against America. And every single war that the British and colonial enterprise that the British have been involved in has been instigated by Jewish bankers, every single one of them. And
you mean India and China? You believe that was both done that? Because we as the Hebrews, I told you Hebrew means colonizer.
That's right. That's right. Well, they were the Jews were exploiting our colonization ability, in that case, the colonization ability of the British. Okay. And always turning something good into something evil. All right, because
right. In other words, like Africa, right?
Exactly.
We went down there and we were a blessing to the African continent.
That's
and
right.
then the Jews came in, stole the diamond mines,
right.
brought all those people in there, and started bringing the ANC communists in there and teaching the black people to hate us.
That's it, right.
You know, hate the white people
yeah.
in South Africa, like they do here in America.
Yeah.
You know, when first Africans came to America, black people didn't even hate America. They knew their, like Chinamen too, or Japanese. They all had respect for the white man.
Yeah.
They all knew that the white man was the primary race and that they were sub-races. And they would show us that respect. They learned this disrespect. I know that people get upset because they think it's always been this way as it is today.
No.
No, they've been taught to be this way. These blacks did not hate us. They came over and they were respective of us. They respected of us,
right.
and they
yes.
and when they were part of a family down the South, They were like part of the family in a sense, because they respected the people. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. And all that kind of stuff. Now the Jews are the ones that have turned them into haters.
That's right. That's for sure. No doubt about that. Well, it all began with, you know, the British Empire was made millions of dollars sending slaves from Africa to America. I think it was 1834 when the British outlawed slavery within the British Empire lands proper, you know, whatever territories they controlled. But that didn't stop the British from supporting the slavery in the South, because they bought cotton from, you know, from the South, right? And the British royalty, they paid themselves a reparation for when they gave up slavery proper in their own territories. They took the treasury and paid themselves several billion pounds in reparations for giving up the slaves. So they could posture as being liberators of the slaves, but pay them, reward themselves handsomely for it. And but they've been always instigating, the British Empire has always been instigating wars and revolutions in other countries since 1695.
Now that's the visible, right, Eli? See, we know how this all works. I always say this. I just want to mention it, though. Okay, mm-hmm. Now we know the invisible.
Right.
Like behind, remember the focus group with Churchill?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
You see what I'm trying to say to you? There's the Churchill is the visible, even though he's a Jew too.
Yes.
But the invisible was that guy who, that Jew we named, he was a Freemasonic Jew, and he gave $2 million to Churchill through this focus group to keep on beating the drums of war.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so there it is, the visible and the invisible.
Yeah.
So when we say the British Empire, what we're really saying, and same way as we're saying America today, Washington, D.C. being the war capital, whereas the Vatican is the religious capital, and England, the little city of London within London, is the economic, financial capital.
Right?
Well, exactly. America today is that same. John McCain is Churchill today.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah, history is repeating itself yet again, hopefully for the last time. Right. Right. So, Disraeli was the father of British imperialism. He was a Jew. Okay. So the Jews admit that they control the British Empire and control British militarism and British colonialism. British colonialism, if it weren't for the Jews, would have been a blessing. One of the first things the British did in India was they built railroads, and they taught them sanitation, right? Gave them medical care.
Good did it do? They called
yeah,
street,
right. Yeah,
you know
right.
what, street, yeah. I'll say it nicely, street crappers.
Yeah, right.
They still crap all over the place.
They put an end to the practice of widow burning, which the Indian widows were very happy about, right? The British colonialists did a lot of good, but every single time they moved into a place to colonize it, the Jews moved in with them and were constantly finagling ways to exploit the people and use the British military to control the people. And, of course, the war between the Muslims and the Hindus in India was a direct result of our British interference. So it's never good. It's never good. Whenever a Jew takes control of somebody's empire, somebody's military, somebody's economy, disaster follows shortly thereafter. And that's what happened to Germany.
Here's an instance that you know about. We went into China. Now, I would love to know what – I've never heard anybody from China say – the same way the Africans have said, it was much better when it was under English control. I've never heard that. Maybe you have. But one thing that happened is, like what you're saying, is one of the reasons for the colonization, they would wait for us to go in and colonize, and then they would bring the heroin trade into China.
Exactly. Right.
Through that colonization. Yeah. In other words, we forged the way, our muscle, our everything – our money, everything, took care of everything, and we were actually becoming a blessing to that place, and they turned the blessing that we blessed into a curse in the same way as they've done in Africa, South Africa. Our blessing down there fed the whole continent. Now they can't even, they have to import their food.
That's right. That's right.
So this is there's the pattern of the enemy yeah. right there that is interesting. So you've never heard the Chinese say it was much better when they wanted to get rid of white control at a certain point, right? That was the Jews that wanted to do that, right? And probably the Chinese. But I would think that we brought a lot to – or England brought a lot to China. I mean, in the good ways,
well,
too.
Originally, it was trade. You know, I mean, the trade benefited both parties, okay? So, but once it developed into the opium trade, okay, which the Jewish Sassoon family monopolized, and then the Jews of Britain supported the Sassoons. The Sassoons were Middle Eastern Jews. They didn't originate in England. But once they had started the opium trade and had took control of China through opium, then the British Empire got involved and supported those Sassoons militarily, and other British Jews followed suit, went over there. It was basically, what do you call it, synagogue-attending Jews who moved to China in swarms and became drug dealers.
And right. they miscegenated, right?
Right, sure.
We've seen Chinese Jews.
Right.
So they've got themselves entrenched in that way there, too.
Business
What's
partners.
Funny about Sassoon is something I just thought about is they take their illegal, they have their illegal businesses, just like the mafia, because Judaism is a mafia. It
That's
really
right.
is.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they go in with their illegal businesses and make enough money to start legal businesses
right.
like
and
Sassoon hair products, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. How do you think Sassoon became a worldwide known name?
Right, sure.
Not through heroin.
Yeah, right, through legitimate businesses, but which were financed by illegitimate businesses.
That's
right?
what I'm trying to say. That's
right,
exactly what I'm trying to say.
Just like the Monsanto. They made their money in the slavery business, right? Now they're making their money in genetic engineering, which is still slavery.
But it is, right? but it's still the slavery business. Why
That's
is
right.
that? Because they put the Terminator seed in all these fruits so that you have to buy the seeds through them.
Yeah.
So it's still slavery. See, the farmers, they're telling the farmers, you can no longer keep your seeds in mm-hmm. you know, farmers used to just take their seeds and put them in those
Yes.
large things and save the seeds for next year's plantings. Well,
right.
now every year they want Monsanto wants them to buy the seeds from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but which is slavery. Because
yeah,
then
for,
now
of
they
course.
Can they can say no, we don't want to
yeah,
sell
well, it's monopoly.
White people's
yeah.
seeds anymore.
It's a global plantation monopoly, right? That's what the Jews will always maneuver themselves to put the non-Jewish businessmen out of business. And so they can monopolize the entire industry. The liquor trade, same thing. Slavery, liquor business.
And you become a slave to liquor, many people do, right?
That's right, exactly.
But yep. here's the thing, Eli. This shows the goodness of the white race.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it because we talked about this last time. I know you want to get into it, but this is good discussion. And I believe this is very interesting discussion because it's just off the top of our heads. Now, think about something. I told you that. Where are the farmers? The Jews can't farm. The blacks can't farm. And basically, we could control the whole food of the whole world.
Yeah.
And we could
because
say,
we grow it.
No,
yes.
no more food for Jews. No
That's
more food
right.
for Jews.
Yeah.
But we don't do that, do we?
No.
We don't even attempt to
cutthroat.
Do it. We wouldn't yeah. do it because we feel that would be wicked, right?
Exactly.
But the Jews have no problem doing that.
Right. Blacks have no problem doing that.
If they could, yeah,
yeah.
The blacks aren't able to share. The Jews will use the blacks, but they never allow them to learn how to do all the dirty stuff that they would do if
right.
they
oh,
could.
Yeah. Didn't want to make them as crafty as Jews. Remember, the beast
right,
of the field.
Exactly.
Nahash was craftier than any beast of the field that Yahweh had made. So the Jews aren't going to teach the blacks everything they know. They'll just teach them a few, and the blacks can't learn the craftiness of the Jews anyway. You know, compound
but just
interest.
Enough so they could be a nuisance.
Exactly. And to be exploited by the Jews.
But my point is, okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and to be exploited by the Jews. You know, the Jews will not educate, you know, the subgroups that they control beyond a certain level. Okay. Just so they can use them to the max. That's the extent to which they will train them how to be good. What's the term? Victims. Victimhood. They will train them in victimhood, right?
Oh, no
right.
doubt about yeah. it. No yeah. doubt about it.
Okay.
Only one thing is they can't be bigger victims than Jews, though.
No, it can't. Nobody could be a bigger victim.
The Jew
victim
has to
than
be
Jew.
The ultimate victim.
No, even if the Jew gets a hangnail, it's the white man's
fault.
Even
when the Jew is doing the crime, they're the victim, you know.
Right, exactly. Right? They've perfected the art of victimhood, and they've been spreading it around the world while destroying the world. Okay, that's the bottom line there. But see, the Jews in the British Empire have a long history of intermarrying with British royalty, okay, to, you know, the lesser positions and ultimately now to the higher positions, because the Mountbattens married into the Windsor family, and Prince Charles does have Jewish blood. There's no doubt about that. So
you can see it.
Yeah, you can see it in his nose, right? That big old hook nose.
In his beady eyes. He's got those
right,
beady
too.
Eyes.
He's got the beady eyes, right? Just like that, what was that, that statue in Chicago. Who's the communist artist from Spain? I can't think of his name. But
I don't pay attention to any of that stuff.
Communist art, you know, the Jews control that too. So, so the British have been intermarrying with Jews at a very high level, you know, since 1700. And so that's why the British Empire has always been doing the Jews' dirty work for the last 300 years.
Right? And where's the loyalty? See, that's what I'm trying to say. Right. In other words, where was the pride in the race? Now, back then, there was no excuse. There wasn't a lot of race mixing being done. Mm-hmm. This was all just for money.
Yes, right. But
see, the reason why Donald Trump has Jews marrying into his family is because mm-hmm. they know that once Donald dies, they'll finagle it off whoever's left over, their daughter or whatever. Right. They'll get it all away from them.
Right. But to be fair to the British, Europe has followed suit tremendously, right? Europe has become just as socialistic and multicultural and miscegenation prone as Great Britain. All right, and possibly even more so. So the Jews have really done a number on Europe, and they're trying to do the same to America. They've succeeded more in Canada, New Zealand, and Australia and South Africa than they have in America. That's why there's such a strong push to integrate America and destroy the white race here, because they know we're the last bastion of resistance. They know
well,
that.
See, there it is again, right? You heard the song, first we'll take New York, then we'll take Berlin. It's really
right.
the opposite.
Right, exactly.
Well, they really had New York all along. They
right.
really did take New York before Berlin. But this that's the whole key to the whole thing, what you just said. See, that's why I gave why this World War I, World War II had to be done, because Germany was the last bastion in Europe.
Yes.
And so what you just said is very, very true. Canada's through, I mean, it is as cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs as you could possibly get.
Right.
I don't know what it is with these English people.
Cocoa
man.
Canada. Cuckoo Canada. Right?
No, they're gonzo. They're like, oh, yeah, give us all your all
it's
the
so
people
liberal.
That you don't want.
Yeah, so there's no right wing resistance at all in Canada. It's just a handful of people. But of course, they don't have a constitution like we do that protects our liberties, right? They don't have that. America is really the only country on the whole planet that has these documented liberties as part of our legal constitution. We're the only ones, okay? So undermining that.
So it is
that,
the last bastion.
It is.
It is the last bastion.
There's no doubt.
And
absolutely.
If they conquer this, they might get their new world order. But I told you they're not going to get it anyway.
No, they're not.
They're not going to have. No. I'm telling you, they're not going to have it.
Yes. No.
Any more than
to,
they're going to have that country over there.
They're going to have to eliminate, 200 million gun owners? not very likely. How are they going to do that? If they declare gun ownership illegal, you're going to get a lot of angry Second Amendment patriots. And they're going to get itchy trigger fingers, I guarantee you. So they haven't taken our guns away, and they never will. They never will, because we're too savvy. Americans are too savvy to fall for that trick. All right? So there's going to be a revolution. There will be a revolution, because the Jews aren't going to give up and we're not going to give up our guns. So there's going to be a revolution, period. That's the way it
you
is.
You know what's funny, too, is people don't think of this, is that, see, this is the Jewish question we're discussing right
That's
now.
That's right, exactly.
But the thing is you'll see shades of this when we read this from this article. But I mean, I just know you will. I haven't read the article. I just know you will. But the thing we don't think about also, another part of the genocide of America, of the white people that we're not thinking about? Is the 300,000 young children go missing every year in our, just in America, never mind all the white people worldwide.
Yeah, it's primarily white kids that are stolen.
So there's white genocide too. That's been going on for a very long time.
And add abortion to that. You know, the genocide of white race.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We always added those things, but I've never actually thought of bringing, I didn't really think of it, but that's another way they're genociding us.
That's
so if you made it past the abortion table, now you might get kidnapped.
Yeah, that's
right. Or you might get sacrificed.
And if you make it
another way
into teenagehood or young adulthood, you'll be sent off to war and die in Jewish wars, right?
These are the traps.
And then the doctors will get you, right? One way or another, their doctors will get you. And if you
doctors don't get you, the lawyers will get you.
The lawyers will get you, right?
Get you with your family. The loyalists, you know,
right? They're actually loyalists, right? I just managed to get to the original 13th Amendment, you know, which would bar anybody from the bar of Britain, right? But we'll get to that next Saturday on Restoration Hour, folks. But this Jewish question, now we're going to try to focus more specifically on the Jewish question in Germany right after World War II. And this is from an article by Daniel Wilson, odd spelling of the first name, D-A-N-I-L-E, Daniel Wilson. And this is from www.woe.edu, okay? And I think that's
W-O-U.edu. W-O-U.edu.
Yeah, Western Oregon University is what that W-O-E stands for, or W-O-U-E-D-U, Western Oregon University, okay?
And it's a PDF, yes.
Right, it's a PDF. And it's a very interesting that this document is published by an official university because very little about the Jewish question is ever published in academia. Almost never. But the title of this is the Jewish Question in the New Republic, 1919 to 1924. In light of the possibility, a possibly vindictive and crippling reparations which would be imposed on the Weimar Republic by the Treaty of Versailles, prominent members of the German Jewish community encouraged the Weimar leadership to revisit the Jewish question in March 1919. So it's the Jews themselves who wanted the Jewish question analyzed. Okay? For although the Weimar Constitution spelled out the rights of German citizens, the leadership of the New Republic held a conference in which they discussed how and whether those rights would apply to immigrants, who, because of the new territorial boundaries of the peace conference, now found themselves outside of Germany. All right, well, the question here, David, is whether the German people, figuring how they've been mistreated by the Jews before and during World War I, would want to have more Jews come into Germany after all of this, right? That's the question that was facing the German people. She goes on to say, the immigration and the fear of a major influx of Jewish immigrants flooding the borders. Hello? What about our borders with Mexico, folks? Right? Don't we have a right to control our borders? Don't the indigenous Germans have a right to determine who should immigrate into their country? Determining its
culture?
Well,
what did you say earlier? What did you say earlier on the show this morning? That we are the ones that establish the borders.
That's right.
That the Israelite nations, the Israelites,
us,
we're the ones that establish borders. That proves that's us alone, Eli.
Yes,
there's another proof in itself. Why does that prove that? Because Israel, the fake Israel, Jews, they don't want any borders at all.
That's right.
Think about that alone. That proves that they're not God's chosen people. That proves that they're not the true seed of Abraham.
Right.
Because it says that we would establish the borders, correct?
Yeah, right. Now, why would Germany fear a major influx of Jewish immigrants if the Jews are such nice people? Why would any country fear a major influx of Jews?
And, I don't know. It says in the Bible, for the fear of the Jews.
For fear of the Jews, right? And that fear has always been justified. Always, because you see what happens when Jews flock into your neighborhood. Right?
Well, the neighborhood goes to hell. Go ahead and tell the people as if they've never heard it before, but tell them. Jewish ritual murder sacrifice. I just told you about 300,000 children missing a year.
Yeah, there you go.
Never mind. What else? What else happens, Eli? What else do they do to the population?
Right. Yeah. Degrading the morality. Right.
Usury.
Creation
land
wars.
Stealing.
Yeah. Right. Debauching the government. Right. Poor everything. Whatever vice.
Poisoning the wells.
Yep. Whatever vice you can think of, is the Jews make business out of it. That's what's going on. And wherever the Jews have settled, this is what they have done. And even Benjamin Franklin, he put it best. He says, whenever the Jews, they degrade the moral tone and they disrupt the economy and become a state within the state. That's how Benjamin Franklin put it. So that's why
the state within the state is what, again?
Right.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
Zionism.
I have to. The state is the invisible, and the state within the state is the invisible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the state is the visible. The state within the state, the Jewish hidden hand, is the invisible. Yeah, the Jewish.
That's correct.
And
same way as with the Illuminati, you have that so-called word. You know what I mean? You have the Freemasonic Lodge, and Weishaupt had to create a secret society within the secret society.
That's right.
So there's your visible would be the Freemasonic lodges, and the invisible is the Illuminati inside the lodge that you don't know about.
Yeah. But even there, the Freemasons, their purposes were not revealed to the public, so it was semi-visible, okay? It was still deceitful. But then the Freemasonic lodges got infiltrated by the Illuminati, so there's a double deception there. And most Freemasons have no idea what's going on. They simply don't. You really have to go high up in Freemasonry to comprehend the agenda, to know what the agenda really is, okay?
I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah, right.
But anyway.
All right. So this required the Weimar leadership to analyze how they would respond and deal with the Jews both within and without Germany. So the ones that were within Germany already were very prosperous. We talked about Jews being heads of industry, heads of media, heads of newspapers, heads of entertainment, heads of this and heads of that. The Jews were doing wonderfully in Germany. So the accusation that the German people were somehow evil and mistreated Jews throughout history is an absolute lie. An absolute lie, of course. The Jews made up that lie after the Weimar Republic and certainly after the rise of Hitler, because now they realized with Hitler they got a problem on their hands. They don't control Germany anymore. So now they had to start the anti-German propaganda. It said, Germany must perish, among other books, okay, written by Jews.
I've got a good reason why they would fear the Jews being in their lands, because when, as you said, they were treated well. What happens when you treat the Jews well?
Yeah.
Well, they stole all the businesses.
Yes.
They bought up the properties at pennies on the dollar.
That's right.
They stole the businesses from the people. They brought in all the debauchery, right?
Yeah.
And so now the German people, this is before Hitler came in, the German people are actually eating out of garbage cans. I think I would not want them in my land if that's the way I ended up with them in my land. If I treated them as a friend and I ended up eating out of garbage cans, I might not want them in my land.
Right. Yeah. Well, the German people understood this. They were aware of the stab in the back. Right. The German people were aware of this, but their government was powerless to do anything about it, and the German people were too good to take vengeance upon the Jews, which the Jews had every right to deserve. Okay? And yet the Germans are constantly being demonized by Jewish writers. Constantly. When it's always the Jews doing the dirty. Always the Jews doing the dirty. Okay? So, this paper will analyze the early years of the Weimar Republic through historiography and mainly three primary sources. The Treaty of Versailles, and we will do a show just on the Treaty of Versailles. You know, to analyze its contents and how unjust it really was. As it pertains to the reparations and the territory adjustments of Germany, which the Jews had no right to do, they carved up Europe, created new countries, and amalgamated other countries, at the whim, at the stroke of a pen. to create.
Do you know that the Three Stooges did that too? That yeah. When Moe was playing Hitler and Curly was a general and he pretended he says I bought all my medals in a hawk shop type thing. Right. Well, they were talking about splitting up the world, and Moe would take the globe, and mm-hmm. they'd try to grab the world from him, and then he'd say, "Give me my world," right? Yeah, right. He's talking about Hitler, right?
Right.
But he like they would say talk about splitting up all of the countries.
Yeah.
You know, like how they were going to steal. So the Jews were accusing Hitler of the very thing that they did.
That's right. Exactly. That's what they always do. Right.
It's the same old game. It's the same old game.
They accused Hitler of wanting to rule the world, which he never did. He had enough problems just reclaiming, just taking back what the Versailles Treaty stole from Germany. Right? That's what Hitler was doing. He was reclaiming what the Jews illegally stole from Germany at the Versailles Treaty. Okay? So then we
could
had
I tell you something?
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say.
I have a picture. I found this just by chance when I was looking through articles today, Eli, and mm-hmm. this will amaze you. Just let me tell you. I'll describe it to you.
Okay.
And then I'll send it over to you in a second.
All right.
It's a circle that says 1919, the League of Nations, and it's in a blue circle, right?
Right.
Then you have, the Chrysler thing that you had that you saw on the hood mount, ornament they would have on Chrysler cars.
Yes.
What that really is the Pentagon.
Oh, okay.
And if you unfolded the stars, it's the same thing. You have the – let me just send it over to you so you can see what I'm talking about very quickly, and you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. See, this is – I'm going to explain to you what it means, and it's important for me to explain this to you because it's just take a second to do. Let me sock it to you right here.
Okay.
Because you're gonna freak out when you see this because this is going to explain everything. So let's see. You're right over here, and here it is. Here it comes. All right, can you open that?
Okay. Let me double-click on it. Okay.
Are you able to?
Opening up. Yeah, League of Nations. So they got the star and they got the Pentagon. There are two stars
okay,
and the Pentagon.
So what is the star, Eli? They got the star within the Pentagon, right? What is the star? What do we already know about that star? That what does Arnold Lee say about that star? That's the star that's on our tanks, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. It's the star that's on the Russian tanks and flags.
Right, the red star,
and it's on also red. Mao Zedong's flag. That is the sign of Edomite control.
Mm-hmm.
That is the star of Amalek.
Okay.
That Yahweh says, I will go to war from generation to generation. Now, if you look at the Pentagon itself, and you can imagine those stars coming out now, the star's arms.
Right.
You'll see that this is the upside down goat of Mendes.
Right.
This is the 5-point plan of Lucifer, how he will be the most high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So they told you this within their little League of Nations logo here. I've never seen this before, but there it is right in front of your face.
Yeah, I've never seen the League of Nations logo. But yeah, it makes sense. It's the Star of Edom. Makes perfect
and,
sense.
And of course, it's the upside down. See, it's the right side up star, and it's the upside down star, which is their father.
Right. Yeah, Baphomet, the goat head. Right.
Or the goat of Mendes. Right.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And so, okay. So continuing here, we have the Treaty of Versailles. We have the Weimar Constitution, as it pertains to the rights of German citizens as well as minorities, and finally the March 1919 conference, which was meant to discuss the Jewish question. Okay? So we have these three primary conferences, the Treaty of Versailles, the Weimar Constitution, and the 1919 conference, March 1919. Prominent members of the German Jewish community seized the opportunity, which they always do. We always seize opportunities. Afforded them by the imminent reparations of the Treaty of Versailles to get the Weimar government to take action in regards to the Jewish questions. In this case, it's many Jewish questions, not just one. And stopping the discrimination against Jews. There was no discrimination against Jews.
Oh, those newspapers said 6 million Jews in Bolshevik Russia were being tortured and starved.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
This is before Hitler was even around.
Yeah. Now, if Jews are complaining that they're not liked, by Germans, or they're not liked by Frenchmen, or they're not liked by Americans, or not liked by Russians, then that's not an issue for the government. Okay? That's a Jewish problem. If there's something, if Jews aren't liked the world over, that means they've got a problem. All right?
But they're. And what does that tell you? Yeah. That tells you that they've not been a blessing to all nations.
That's
and the
right.
seed of Abraham would truly be a blessing to all nations. If they were a blessing to every nation they were in, that nobody would have ever kicked them out, would they?
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, see, there's your proof right there.
But you're making too much sense. People. You're making too much sense. You're not going with the propaganda, David. Right.
Well, I mean, I have to point it out because you see, that's the whole thing. When we keep on telling you, you're doing the show with Pastor Greg there. I mean, talking about the, you know, Israel, what the points of the marks of Israel would be. Well, one of the marks of Israel would be that we would be a blessing to the other families of the world, the other nations.
Right.
Well, if how can the Jews be God's chosen people if they've never blessed even one nation?
Right.
I mean, have they blessed America?
Never.
No. It's a curse.
They're not
they've
even
cursed
blessing
every land they've been on because they are a cursed people.
They're not even a blessing to themselves because they always wind up getting kicked out, right? And they will again. They're going to get kicked off the planet this time. All right.
I hope so. To the moon. To the moon.
That's right. There you go. The moon. Hey, the final solution. Send them to the moon. The Jewish question has referred specifically to how governments, in this case, Germany, would respond to the Jews in the laws and rights that governments would award to the Jews, but also particularly in the limiting of the discrimination which had been so rampant throughout Europe towards the Jews. So everybody admits that Europe. Now, the European nations didn't like Jews, okay? But they never ask why. That's a verboten topic, okay? The Weimar Republic, like much of Europe, had many citizens who were Jews and had to decide whether to expand the rights of minorities to equal those of German descent. To the Republic's credit, the government did grant full citizens' right to the long-denied Jews, but only those who now lived within the new borders of the state. All right, so those Jews who were within the Republic, the Weimar Republic's borders, were granted full citizenship, which I'm pretty sure they already had even before World War I, because German Jews were very well off. But now we're anticipating an influx of non-German Jews, namely Jews from Poland and from other parts of Eastern Europe, Russian Jews, etc., into Germany. Now, why should Germany absorb all these unwanted Jews from other countries? Okay.
Well, let's stop right there.
Yeah.
Why don't you just place that question today?
Yeah, right.
Okay. But number two, here's the thing. What's the first? Why did they want to go to Germany anyway? Because the German people are the cream of the crop of the white race. They are the mm-hmm. tribe of Judah. And why do you think so many Jews wanted to keep miscegenating and mixing with them?
Yes.
They wanted the brains. But they also need to race mix, as I've proven many times. They don't have life force in their blood. They don't have the life force in their bone marrow. So they have to race mix no matter what land they're in. But the thing is they wanted to mix with the Germans to help breed them out and mm-hmm. to acquire their Anglo-Saxon minds, their gift as being the tribe of Judah.
Exactly.
And it's another way of assimilating becoming the tribe of Judah. They've claimed they are the tribe of Judah. Of course, they're not any of the tribes, but that's what's going on there. So what do the Jews do? Here's a pattern of your enemy you're showing me right now. First, they come in with the regular Jews. Then they bring the low-life Jews in.
Right.
And then after that, they bring in the Negroes and everybody else.
Right, exactly. It's a pattern. It's a process of wiping out the white race through constant immigration.
But this is way back then.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing it today.
Yeah. Well, it's the Kudenhove-Kalergi. It's the Kudenhove-Kalergi plan. But even before Kudenhove-Kalergi, right? Okay.
It's also the Hutten plan
to
breed out the Germans.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. So leading figures in the German Jewish community grasped the moment. Never let a good crisis go to waste. When the German, right, our famous mayor here in Chicago, right, never let a good crisis go to waste. When the German government was still reeling from the lost war and the upcoming harshness of the Treaty of Versailles, the German Jews called for a conference to discuss 6 points which made their wish list their deepest desires. Okay, the Jews always have a constantly increasing wish list.
Six points. It wasn't Yahweh's seven.
No.
I'm surprised it wasn't five, but they wanted six.
Yeah, well, they didn't want to admit they're Edomites. They did not necessarily believe that the points would be accepted, but they presented it in such a way that the Weimar government could not refuse. Well, why? Because with international power behind them, they would always get what they want. The leaders of the Jewish community in Germany stated that if the government formulated a plan, which the government could then present to the League of Nations, more Jews, right? Then perhaps as a result of their intuitive action, no, this is not intuitive, folks. This is deliberate, planned with a forethought. The League of Nations would be more lenient in the upcoming treaty and reparations which were to be imposed upon Germany alone. Well, more lenient to the Jews. Well, the fact is, the Jews did not suffer during the Weimar repression. They were the ones doing the oppressing. The Weimar Republic was established in 1918 after the German Revolution and thus ended the German Empire. Who caused the German Revolution, David?
Of course, Jews. And that woman there. And
Rosa Luxemburg.
And of course, well, that's what they figured out. Like I said, they came back from World War One, and they said, what happened? How did we lose the war?
Yeah, right. The Jews lost it for us, right?
So they began to figure out that the Jews were in the government of, you know, thing is all about.
That's right. If the Jews weren't in the government, there would have been no stab in the back. Okay.
Here comes my favorite word. It was the first democracy.
Democracy, right.
So let's look at that alone. The Weimar Republic was established in 1918 after the German Revolution, and which wasn't a German Revolution at all.
No.
And
it was a Jewish Revolution against Germany.
Right?
Right, right.
So it was the first democracy in Germany. The first democracy in Germany, and it's a failure.
What did
I tell you about the democracy?
Well, yeah, democracy is just another word for Jewish government, right? That's all it is.
That's exactly right. Right? It divides the public, like I said, and it also leads to tyranny. They get a hold of the bank, and that's the mechanism that controls it. There it is. Democracy, the government is the visible, the bank is the invisible.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see the banks there, you just don't know it's controlling. Right.
There's never been...
The very first democracy failed in Germany. What does that tell you?
That's right. There's never been a democracy that hasn't been controlled from the top by Jews. Never. It's always been controlled by Jews. No matter what country, it's always been controlled by Jews. So, the Weimar Republic was the first democracy in Germany, and according to Detlev Pukert's The Weimar Republic, it struggled to prove its legitimacy and claim to power. Well, that's because it wasn't legitimate. It was a fictitious state. Remember, Germany did not lose the war. They just signed a treaty to end hostilities. Okay? It was internal Jewish conniving, especially the communists, to overthrow the established government that led to the Weimar Republic.
I believe we read some of this in a previous show, but it doesn't matter because we derive something more out of it each time. You know, I know
we just ran through it quickly.
The 6 points, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but we just ran through it quickly, I think, at the end of last week's show. This is really important stuff, right? The Weimar Republic was established in 1918 after the German Revolution, thus ended the German Empire. It was the first democracy in Germany, and the beginning of the Republic was not made obvious by an event that could be used as a political unifying symbol of a pivotal moment in the country's history, such as the American Declaration of Independence or the Sedan Day after the creation of the German Empire in 1870-71. No, it was a series of cutthroat tactics employed by the Germans against the Germans by the Jews. That's why there was no announcement by the German people, hey, we're starting a republic. It was all done for them by the Jews. That's why there's no pivotal moment. Okay? But I would say the pivotal moment is the stab in the back. when the Jews...
But that's behind the scenes, right?
That's, of course, it's behind the scenes. Yeah, the German people didn't realize they'd been stabbed in the back by a global Jewry until after the fact. You know, they never would have lost the Palestine if it weren't for the Jews promising to bring America into the war in exchange for giving Palestine to the Jews.
Right, there's so. Also another pattern of the enemy exposed right there. And mm-hmm. I have to keep pointing this out because when you want to know your enemy, you want to realize. See, it's just like I said. You see, they didn't know about the stab in the back until way after the stab in the back. Well, it's mm-hmm. the same thing as what's going on today. We've just come to start realizing when Eustace Mullins wrote the Federal Reserve, what a stab in the back the Federal Reserve Bank was.
Yes.
You see, and the Noahide laws are put in right now. And when the heads are rolling, if it, hopefully that'll never happen, but if the heads begin to roll, about 20, 30 years after that, people say, oh, George Bush Sr. put in that with a bunch of rabbis, and he's a Jew too.
Yeah, right.
And they put in the Noahide laws, but they're not implemented right this moment.
Yeah, right.
But that's how that's the pattern of the enemy. Just like this League of Nations was put in the Versailles Treaty. I didn't know that was in there, but it mm-hmm. wasn't really, really implemented. I mean, yes, the reparations and things were implemented, but what happened is that they started the UN then. Then yes. when the UN was really implemented was in 1945 after the war.
Right, right.
That's the pattern of the enemy right there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they keep the pressure on. Once the Jews had their foot on Germany's neck, they never relented, okay, until Hitler threw them out.
The press is the key, though, Eli, right?
Yes.
You realize that the press is the key. Rockefeller said in his book that we thank the New York Times and the right. Washington Compost and all them because we could have never done these things if it wasn't for them.
Yes.
That's the key. That's why right. the Juden press should have it taken away. That's the first thing we should do is take the press away from these Jews.
Amen.
Because that's how yes. they've been able to implement this pattern you're seeing, the stab yes. in the back, and you don't find out about it till 50 years later. We knew it was always said that it was a conspiracy theory that, you know, we got into the war with Japan and everything, and it was all deliberate. And everybody said, no, that's a conspiracy. Now we find out all the planes were put up in a circle facing each other so they couldn't take off.
Right.
We found out the truth. But how long did it take for us to find out? Well, that's because of the Juden press.
That's right. Yeah. Fake news by fake Jews. Snake Jews.
Yeah, fake
right?
news is not a new thing. Fake news may be a new term to people, but it's always been fake news. That's the real point.
Exactly. Exactly.
Even back paragraph. In Hitler's time, it's fake
absolutely.
News.
Absolutely. Well, bottom of page 4, the last paragraph, when the war was lost, the League of Nations stipulated that a new government be set up. So here's a bunch of Jews, the League of Nations. We proved that the League of Nations was totally a Jewish setup. Every country represented had a Jewish advisor to that country, and the Zionists themselves had an entire delegation at the League of Nations, at the Versailles Treaty. So it was Jewish from top to bottom. So the Jews stipulated that a new government be set up. The Jews were in control of it. The local German Jews were the ones to set it up with help from international Jews. Okay? First paragraph, next page. With the upheaval of the lost war and the struggle to establish a new government, the first years of the Republic were turbulent, to say the least. We documented the starvation of German children because of the blockade. All right? Next paragraph. As previously mentioned, the Jewish question had become a renewed issue in the New Republic, but it had been an issue in much of Europe, but especially Germany, since the time of the Enlightenment. And now remember, since about 1860 or so, Jews in Germany had been prospering. Whether or not they had full voting rights, I'm not sure, but they were better off in Germany than any other country, and they were constantly flocking to Germany because they had a very good life there. Okay? So what we see here is despite the prosperity that Jews had seen in Germany since the 1850s, they were never quite satisfied. They were always there just to take advantage of the German people and never to integrate, never to assimilate.
That's another pattern. Mm-hmm. See, they won't let them assimilate. The rabbis,
no, the rabbis won't. No,
want to keep no. this keep this thing going. See, if they got absorbed into their population, they would lose a big component of their criminal organization worldwide.
Right.
They need the Sayanim.
Right.
They need the little Jew that's maybe sweeping floors somewhere. You might think mm-hmm. there aren't any, but I've seen a couple. They need them in every element of society so that they know what's going on in those elements of society.
Yes. Right.
So these Sayanims report, you see. So basically, if they get absorbed into the population and became Americans or became Germans, they just lost a big part of their army, and it's a very small army to start off with, correct?
That's right. Sure, yeah.
So they do not let them assimilate that way.
No.
They keep putting them in fear about, you know, like people like us that talk, that actually right. say the word Jew.
Right.
And, of course, that's hate speech.
Well, they will allow Jewish men to intermarry with white women in whatever country, but their offspring will be subversives, just like
no
the Jews are everywhere, right? Subversives, okay? But she answers my question in the next sentence. The Jews received their full civil rights in Austria in 1867. However, in Germany, they did not receive them until 4 years later, 1871, and there were still many prejudices and laws in place against them. Well, why? First of all, let's analyze this, David, going back into the days of Napoleon, when the Jews in Germany were demanding equal rights with German citizens. First of all, Germany was a Christian country. Jews are blatantly anti-Christian, demonstrably so. And their hatred of Christ and Christianity was never held back anywhere. So why should a citizen, a country full of German Christians want to accept Christ-hating Jews as equal citizens, knowing that they all they will do is undermine Christianity?
I'll answer for you.
Yeah, please do.
Biblically speaking, light can have no place with darkness.
That's right.
Okay, so basically common sense should have told those people immediately. It's like I said to you with the ducks and hens. You got to think about that. That's the problem, is we keep on casting these hens onto our brothers' countries. When they come to your door, you should have realized that you're a nation of light, that you're a nation of Christianity, and you should have been in contact with your other brothers in your other countries, and they would have told you what these people did in their nations, so that when they stepped up onto your doorstep, you would have said, no, you are people of darkness, and
that's
darkness
right.
has no place with light. We know that from the scriptures.
Yeah.
So we can, you do not deserve to come into our nation, and it will do nothing good for us to have you in here.
Right.
I'm sorry about what happened to you, but you're going to have to go live with the other sub-races like yourself.
Yes.
That's just, see, we didn't even have to kill them all. Just making them go with the other sub-races would have been a death sentence in its own way.
Yes. She says that until the Weimar Republic, Jews had been excluded from obtaining higher positions in the public service and academic world. That's not true. We demonstrated that Jews had risen to heights in academia, in publishing, in industrialism, everywhere in Germany. You know, they weren't really held back. They were resented
and seated in the government.
Exactly.
in the government. Absolutely.
Yeah. And the German banking institutions, too. They were in top positions in all spheres of the society. So what this statement she made here just isn't true. Okay?
Well, but remember one thing.
Yeah.
One of the Rothschild brothers went to Germany, didn't he?
Yes.
To establish a bank.
That's right.
Hello.
Frankfurt. Okay? So,
yeah.
But then
Hello.
She says, now this is a tacit admission that the Jews were prominent in the Weimar Republic. The Jews found themselves capable of playing an important part in the post-war public life, in the liberal parties, in the parties of the left, in the universities, and the mass media. No. Really?
The way it is in America today?
Right. They're so oppressed, David. They're so oppressed wherever they go.
We should be so oppressed.
Yes.
We should be that oppressed.
Yes, we
Why
should.
Is it? Why do you think it is, Eli? See, this was naturally, this is probably, you know, Yahweh wanted it this way because this is the way the history would go. And he was teaching us what happens when you don't do what I tell you to do. When I told you to kill these Jews, you wouldn't be living like you are today. That's a repeat. But yes. What I'm saying is, notice how we don't see our Anglo-Saxon people. We're not really gravitating toward the government.
No.
We didn't really want to get control of big power, do we?
Yeah. We just want to be left alone.
We don't even want to get Yahweh's seat.
Right.
We don't want we just wanted to have a king rule over us, a just king, and then we could live our lives. We're not really interested that I mean some are, but not as many. Notice how the Jew, I told you, automatically gravitates to the city, and one of the main reasons
That's
is power.
Right.
Is
right.
to get themselves
exactly.
in that government because that's where the change, that's where this going against the establishment, you have to get in the establishment to change it.
Yes. Well, now I'm seeing why this article was published by a mainstream academia press is because it basically is trying to, make excuses for Jews. Okay, it's doing its absolute best to make excuses for Jews. It continues, however, despite the new mobility and cultural influence which that Jews had gained under the Weimar Republic, old sentiments still held strong, and the German Jewry often found themselves facing a rise of anti-Semitic discrimination. Well, here's the situation. Germans are starving to death. They're losing their homes. They're losing their jobs. While Jews are running the shark rackets, right, the prostitution rings, and the international Jews are supporting local Jews so that they don't starve. So the German people are starving to death, losing their homes, losing their businesses, losing their jobs, while the Jews are prospering. So Germans had to notice that, right, and be resentful of it. Now they call this anti-Semitic discrimination. It's clearly the other way around. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you know about Oren Petito, what he said about that, about them you would have lost your restaurant to a Jew, and you'd be starving walking down the street, walking by the windows of your own restaurant.
Yeah.
And inside would be these fat Jews mocking you.
Yes.
Now, we saw that on the Three Stooges as well.
Yep.
Okay? If you remember. Only the Jews were the ones being mocked, them.
Yeah. So see
how they use Hollywood?
See, here's how the Jews are being discriminated against. Problems which faced German Jewry were the fear of the loss of their cultural identity. Oh, that's such a horrible thing. That's so horrible.
Now, what about our cultural identity?
Yeah, but they weren't starving.
What about the loss of ours?
They weren't starving and eating out of garbage cans like the Germans were, right? See, but this is actually pro-Jewish, now that I'm reading it more carefully. Many Jews assimilated into the German culture which surrounded them, forgetting their roots and traditions. Well, they were having such a good time. The Orthodox Jews and the Zionists attempted to combat this assimilation through different methods. Right, as you were just saying. The rabbis will not allow Jews to fully assimilate because that would mean the end of Jewry.
That's right. They're part of the team. In other words, they're small people as it is, right? So they can't afford to lose one third of their people to assimilation. Mm-hmm. They have to keep them full of fear, because they want to keep them in the criminal organization and supporting the criminal organization.
Yes, yeah. Interestingly, a challenge to the German Jewish identity was the immigration of the Ostjuden, or Jews from Eastern Europe. These immigrants had very different ways and traditions than the German Jewish community. The German Jewish community was much more cultured, even though they were well below the standards of Germans. These Eastern European Jews were really the scum of the earth. The Ostjuden differed from their German counterparts socially, culturally, and in their forms of worship, and these dissimilarities caused conflicts within the Jewish community itself. In other words, the German Jews didn't want these Eastern European Jews, right? Also, due to their strange accents and unfamiliar forms of behavior, the Ostjuden became a particular focus for anti-Semitic prejudice between the Jewish communities and Jews. Yeah, because they were scum. Plus, also, they came from Eastern Europe with plenty of gold. And so these Eastern European Jews were buying up real estate from starving Germans.
See, they were afraid of competition from their own factors.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
But you know what's funny about it, too, is that what it is if you want to put it in today's terms, number one, the first thing we find out is that it is a clash of cultures. It's a clash of light against darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So if you bring the Jew in first, you've already have a major cataclysm of the two cultures that are clashing against one another. And immediately the Jew begins to attack the culture that they're coming into.
That's right.
And tries to destroy Christianity, tries to destroy Yahweh, goes against the establishment. But then when they figure out we don't have enough clash of culture, that's when they begin to want these open borders and bring in Negroes and all kinds of people from other cultures. And today it's an absolute cataclysm of culture clashes. That's exactly what it is. It's so many culture clashes at once that it is now like a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what I'm saying. Because yeah. Now these Muslims come in, we're celebrating Easter or something, and you know, we don't know any better. We're eating pig, not us, but right. You know who.
Right.
And so now they're upset about that. You know what I mean? So the Muslims want to kill them for that because their culture. you see what I'm saying? So all
yes.
These things are conflicting with one another. This is why Yahweh put everybody in the place he wanted them to be, because that's called order. When you talk about the New World Order, it's really New World Disorder. It is the breakdown of order, but it's not to fix it and bring it into an orderly fashion, because multiculturalism can never work. It can never be yes. brought into order.
Right. Here's an interesting statement. Although they were not fully accepted into German society, Franz Rosenzweig, who was a Jewish philosopher who desired the Jews to become both German and Jews, believed that the Jews could flourish as they had in Babylon when the two cultures had merged. Okay. All right. That's an admission that Judaism comes from Babylon. He believed that German Jewry would reach a cultural maturity when it had that it could learn to be both German and Jewish, the importance landing on the "and," which made it seem possible. Well, we know that whenever a Jew is German and Jewish, or American and Jewish, or British and Jewish, the emphasis is always on the Jewish.
And what happens when the black becomes a mulatto? He always gravitates towards the dark side.
That's
what
right.
happens when the Jew marries the white man? They gravitate toward
yeah.
the Jew.
Yeah.
To the dark side.
Yes. What's
you see, I'm sure somebody will come out and say, "Well, I know somebody who's black and white, and he acts like a white man." And yeah. We're talking about the 99%. In other words, why is that? That is a question in itself. Why does when somebody becomes a mulatto, why do they gravitate toward the dark side? Why is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's natural. It's a spiritual
right,
thing.
It is. It's a spiritual thing. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So we can see that this Jewish question is never going to be resolved, because the Jews themselves never want it to be resolved. They always need to be in a position of power and authority over whatever country they are hosting, or is hosting them, I should say. And they will never relinquish that control, never. So there's always going to be a Jewish question as long as they exist. That's
you know
why
what I think our problem yeah. is, Eli, is this.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about the Anglo-Saxon, when he makes organizations, he makes golf clubs.
Right.
You know what I mean? He wants to be on vacation. In other words, he's going to work hard. He's going to do his job. But when he wants to, when he's done with his job, he wants to go to the golf course, or he wants to go to the lodge, or he wants to go. So he only organizes things like that. While the Jews are out organizing against his government, against his people, against his culture, with the ADL, the SPA, Southern Poverty Law Center, the NAACP, you know, all the organizations. The Jew is out organizing all these things against him, while he just wants to go work his job, and he wants to, you know, or have mm-hmm. his business, and he just wants to have leisure time. See, we don't know. See, while the Jew is at war with us and they're doing what people do at war, they're warring against us all the time while we're thinking about vacations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Seriously. We're not thinking exactly. about getting into our government and making the country a better place. We're not thinking about, I mean, there are some of us, but what I'm saying is we're thinking about that trip we could go on. Right. We're always thinking, we don't know we're at war.
That white privilege.
If we knew we were at war, we'd be acting like it.
That white privilege to work our butts off that we need a vacation, right?
Yeah, so in other words, what I'm saying is we don't do these big organizations. Yeah, we might have organized something for the you know, children that are orphans and things like that. But then all of a sudden the Jew gets control of that and turns it into something else, you see.
Yeah.
So all the time when we forge something good, somehow the Jew gets involved, like we were saying in China, and puts the heroin trade in. So there's your pattern of the enemy. So we see that they're great organizers of all kinds of organizations all over America, right?
Mm-hmm.
But most of these organizations are not our organizations. They're organized to go against us.
Yeah.
They're organized to destroy our society, the ADL, the JDL, etc. Think about that, because that is what's going on. And then they've got it to the point where if we want to organize, well, you can't organize something. You're white.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I don't go for that. But I mean, in other words, they're the only ones that can organize. And, of course, the blacks think that they started the NAACP and all this nonsense. They didn't start any of those things. The Black Panthers aren't started by blacks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't believe. I really don't believe so. Yeah. I know the NAACP was started by Jews.
That's right.
So this is how this isn't anything new that we're talking about. This was going on in Germany. And what the problem is the Anglo-Saxon is really not that interested in history either.
Yeah,
he's interested in that vacation.
Unfortunately. One more statement from this document. I'm going to scroll down. Considering the fact that Germany did not lose the war per se, the harshness of the Treaty of Versailles was surprising and quite unfair. That is a true statement. Since no one had won the war, the treaty should have been more lenient of the opposite side. It certainly should have. But she never talks about the fact that the Jews are the ones who arranged the Versailles Treaty. They arranged for the League of Nations, and they arranged for the reparations, the harshness of the German reparations. She never talks about that. She's just focusing on the problems the Jews had in assimilating under these trying circumstances, right? The treaty was a long document, including 444 articles. It's a big... Again, doesn't it sound to you, David, like this treaty was prepared in advance?
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it one bit, you know.
440
what I mean? That
treaty articles?
Was probably worked on in 1815. It's probably has leftovers from the time when they wanted to bring the League of Nations in.
Congress of Vienna, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I got something beautiful to read for you when you're done reading the same article. Wait till I show you.
Oh,
this.
Okay. Well, just it was early 1919 and finished April of 1919 after several months of hard bargaining, and it was presented to the German government on the May 7th of 1919. The German government was only allowed 3 weeks to accept the terms of the treaty, which it had not seen previously. So they have years to prepare the treaty, and the German government only has 3 weeks to accept it.
That's ridiculous.
See how it works, folks? Okay, over to you.
You want to hear this? Listen to this.
Sure.
See, I love the patterns. I just love pointing out the patterns. In her analysis of the Constitution, the constitutional protection of minorities in Germany, Weimar revisited. Karen Schoenwalder states that the constitutional rights which the Weimar government granted to minorities were more likely a reaction to the possible loss of territories rather than of a concern for the rights of the minorities. In the Weimar Constitution, Article 113, it stated that the state respects the identity of ethnic, cultural, and linguistic minorities.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the pattern?
Yeah, right. It's multiculturalism.
So in other words, the Germans are worried. They're worried about losing the territories, and they figure, well, if we allow these minorities and give them rights in our country through this constitution, that might solve some of it. But you see, what
it says here is,
well, it's nothing new. Yeah. However, the independent social democrat Oscar Cohn, geez, that's not a Jew name, is it? proposed that the wording of the Constitution was insufficient. He also stated that minorities could very well adopt German as their mother tongue, but nevertheless retain their foreign nationality.
Yeah.
He also wanted Jews to be included.
Okay, folks, now
as
you know
far as the,
what a democracy
anything new
is.
Under the sun?
Now you know what a democracy is.
It's for anybody but white people.
Right.
It's for anybody
well,
but
it's
those
for
German
white
people,
people
what they're talking about right
to,
here.
It's for white people to pay the way for non-whites to destroy the white country's government. The white people's
That's
government.
That's correct.
That's what democracy is.
And you can thank Yahweh for teaching us that through reading Saul Alinsky's work, because I would have never known that. I knew about the division, but I had no idea.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. Believe me, isn't it kind of funny when I started talking about that, my YouTube channel shut off all of a sudden.
Yeah, right? Naughty, naughty. Shouldn't talk about Saul Alinsky and democracy.
Well, I mean, that is the revelation of the year. I mean, to me, the division part was the big revelation how the Jews use division. But what blows me away is I never realized that democracy is not for us. That democracy is the very vehicle they use to destroy the nation. And you could see it in the Weimar Republic. They start the first democracy in Germany. It's a failure. But it's meant to be a failure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's right.
It destroyed them financially. It destroyed them, their businesses. It destroyed everything. It got them to the point they were eating out of garbage cans.
Right.
So,
well, isn't that what's going on in the Middle East? Total destabilization in the name of what? Democracy.
In the name of freedom and democracy.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
But you know what it is too, right? Is I know why this is happening. Let's look at the big picture. You heard that Netanyahu and a friend of his, I can't remember the other Jew's name, they decided they're going to restructure the Middle East. They just decided, just like these Jews decided what they're going to do in Germany, just like these Jews decided what they're going to do in the Versailles Treaty. The Netanyahu and another Jew are going to restructure the Middle East. So what do we see happening here? Not only do we see what's affecting us, that they're emptying out the Middle East of all the people and bringing them to our nations, that very thing will be the way they can restructure everything in the first place.
Yeah.
Then they hope, of course, that it will spark a culture war against each other where we'll kill as many of both of us as possible.
That's right. That's right.
That's what it's all about.
Exactly. To kill as many white people as possible. That's what
I saw an article, Eli, that said, this was about 4 months ago. It said that America was spending, I can't remember how many billions of dollars, to destabilize the Middle East.
Right.
I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you at all.
Billions, yeah. Yeah, and at the behest of the Zionists here in America. Right. It's all at the Jewish instigation. All of it. Yeah. I've got to read this from page 21. This is too good. Die Deutsche Geist, the German spirit, was printed in 1924 in Das Tagebuch, a Jewish journal. The German spirit, which defined and motivated Germany to be German, would be severely lacking if it lost its electrifying Jewish element. The editorial goes on to quote an article in the Deutsche Zeitung, German newspaper, which was written about the ultra-German writer Hermann Stehr's 60th birthday. Most of the people who went to celebrate the birthday and who spoke in honor of Stehr were Jews. And the article in Deutsche Zeitung said that all the present Germans were pained by the repetition of the same spectacle, referring to the Jews speaking rather than more Germans. No, Germany was not totally controlled by Jews. That's unfair of us to say. Now, this is even better. The German spirit concludes with the reaffirmation of the fact that German culture and German society would be sadly lacking if not for the Jewish influence in both. See, we just can't survive without Jews.
Oh, no.
The Jews are so important to our cultural and spiritual life. You see, they're so useful.
That's propaganda. If you've ever heard the word propaganda and you never really understood it, you just heard it.
That's right. The Jews are inestimably important to civilization everywhere, especially to German civilization, or so they say. Right?
I have a little trinket for you.
Yeah, okay.
They call it the Weimar Republic, but it's a democracy.
That's right.
Hello!
And we know which form of government...
I didn't realize that until just now. It just dawns on me.
Right. And you know which form of government is the worst of all forms, right?
Yeah, democracy. But are you done reading that? I want to read you something else, but go ahead.
No, I'm done. I mean...
Isn't that amazing? It's called the Weimar Republic, but it's a democracy, the first democracy in Germany.
Well, of course, people don't know the difference anymore. They've been brainwashed. They don't understand. But this really shows Jewish tactics within Germany, and it proves how well off the Jews were within Germany, even when the German people were starving. And, and being killed off by leftists, Jewish leftists, all right? So,
the fact that they let the German people starve?
That's right.
While they were doing good.
That's right.
How about that fact? How come nobody thinks about, well, since they had so much money and they were so blessed by their friends, the Germans, they tried to help them to their feet.
No mention of that. This article doesn't mention, even though this article is very friendly to Jews, it doesn't see any way of Jews helping the Germans. Except
cultural
enrichment.
So you see what
happens
when you get the Jews in your nation? They suck all the resources out of you, all the blood out of you, and while you're laying there on the ground, you notice, you ever see this with the blacks too?
Yeah.
Say, I've seen several things. They'll walk in. Say if I've seen two people on heroin, that they were sold bad heroin or bad kind of drugs, and they shot them up, and these two white people are laying almost dead on the sidewalks, and the blacks walk around and they mock them and they try to pick their phones out of their hands and they laugh and they're laughing like chimps and stuff like that. Right.
That's right.
Now what
That's
happens? Right. Let's look at that situation. That's the same way the Jews are treating the Germans that are down right now. And they've sucked all the blood. Right. Well, what the blacks do is say that's happening. Now, if those were all white people, what would take place? Those white people would be trying to help the two blacks up off the floor,
They'd
call the ambulance and try to get somebody over there to help them, right? No, the blacks don't operate. They'll let you die right there on the street, and they'll be laughing while it's going on.
That's right, while they're picking your pocket, right?
Yeah, well, that tells you something. That speaks volumes. And if you can't understand that, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry, but what I'm saying is there's your testimony about people being a blessing. Now, the Jews are in a nation. They've sucked all the blood. They were let in the doors, and they were allowed to be equal. And what happens? Everything gets unequal. The Germans are eating out of garbage cans, and the Jews don't start any welfare plans to help those Germans and give them free food like they do to the blacks in America. You understand what I'm telling you right now? Think about what I'm telling you right now. Now, these are the champions of the have-nots. And now the white people in Germany became the have-nots in their own nation. But there was no welfare program started to make sure that those Germans could eat good food. Where were the welfare program? Where was socialism? Where was democracy there? And so that's the kind of common sense thinking that we need to understand. See, people, I don't understand how people can't understand that. Think about what I'm telling you, the gravity of those two races, the two examples I just gave you. It shows you that they don't give a shh about us.
Mm-hmm.
But when the thing is turned around the other way, we care about them and we help them up off the ground.
That's right.
Something's wrong somewhere, ladies and gentlemen.
We never get paid back in kind for our good deeds. Let me just read this little section. Yeah.
Go ahead, Eli. Go ahead.
No, I was just, we never get paid back for our good deeds. We always get stabbed in the back every single time.
Yeah, but I thought democracy is for the have-nots. I just told you democracy is not for white people. I'm proving it to you.
That's right.
Because in Germany, if this happens in America and we're eating out of garbage cans and we're not allowed to have the welfare program to get us on our feet, you'll see that that democracy wasn't for us.
That's right.
They can walk a Negro over the border today or anyone from any nation in the whole world, and they have instant full medical care, full food stamps. I don't have any of these things. They give these cities, these sanctuary cities, $27 billion a year to give these people money. My government's never given me any portion of $27 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Not even once.
Yes.
So let me just, that ought to speak volumes to you. If you can't understand that, what I just told you, or what Yahweh just told you, then you're blind as a bat. Let's listen to this right here, this quick thing. As the Republic attempted to stabilize Germany, the Republic, the democracy, as the Republic attempted to stabilize Germany in the wake of the unsuccessful First World War, members of the government met in the first of what was to be several meetings to discuss the Jewish question and to hopefully develop a program. Which would help the League of Nations see that Germany could deal justly with human rights. Now, that human rights is not for the German human rights, understand, because democracy is not for white people.
That's right.
And in the hopes of preventing League of Nations from inflicting some of the harsh reparations, because of the war and the following reparations, the economy, which the Weimar Republic stepped into, was destroyed, and the German people were losing faith in the government, in the democracy. According to Jürgen Matthäus, a German historian, this conference was to be the first of many to determine how the new German government would handle the issue of the Jews, particularly in Poland. And it could go on from there, but think about what is being said. What we just said is amazing to me, Eli. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't prove to you that democracy is not for white people, then nothing is. If the Germans are eating out of garbage cans, where was the social programs? Why weren't those Jewish champions that had all that money and were eating fat in the restaurants, why weren't they helping the people that helped them?
Mm-hmm.
But they were helping the minority, right. And they were helping the Negroes and all those people, right?
There's always money for minorities.
Think about that, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't understand... I don't know what more I can say. Amazing revelation in this show. An amazing revelation. Yeah. I hope you go back and listen to what we just said.
Yeah. It's an even-handed approach, in which this article tries to deal even-handedly about the Jewish question. Just doesn't mention at all the way in which international Jewry and local Jewry really persecuted the German people. No mention of that whatsoever. And still presents the Jews as being victims. it's simply incredible.
Can I read this for you?
Go ahead.
Listen to this. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay, they were talking about the League of Nations, okay? He states that the following points have been suggested by the members of the German Jewish community to promote and to emphasize at the peace conference of the League of Nations. This is page 26, Eli.
All right.
I want you to go there. You got to get a load of this. Wait till you get a load of this. This is something I've been telling people. So the German Jewish community is going to promote and emphasize at the peace conference of the League of Nations, the number one point is equality for Jews and Judaism in all the countries of the world.
Yes.
Abolition, number two point, abolition and prohibition of all laws, decrees, and regulations containing restrictive measures applicable exclusively to Jews.
Mm-hmm.
especially bans on immigration and the closing of the borders to Jews. Now, notice that the Jew is included in that, but the minority is within that, the immigration. Right. Notice who wants the immigration here. This is something from way before you were born, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
So they want equality for Jews and Judaism in all the countries of the world. Number two, they want to take away any laws, decrees, regulations containing restrictive measures applicable exclusively to Jews, especially bans on immigration and the closing of the borders to Jews. Mm. Number three, in other words, with the ducks and the hens, right, they don't have to cry at your border anymore. They just walk by.
That's right.
Okay?
Right. Yeah.
That is therefore open borders. Now, again, what you said on your show, the true Israelite nations would be the ones that would determine the borders.
That's right.
Obviously, these internationalist Jews who are the seed of
Cain, borders. Of Cain, are destroying borders, yes.
Don't want any borders.
Mm-hmm. They're erasing borders.
So, they're not, they can't be. That's another proof. It's another mark on them as a people that they are not
Israel.
Israel in any form or fashion.
Yes.
Number three, national and cultural autonomy within the new states to the extent demanded by the majority of Jews living in those parts.
See, it's all Jewish demands, all of it. That's what's incredible. There's so much in this article, even though it's sympathetic to Jews, it reveals so much in a nonchalant way, right? It's amazing.
Like as if this was like, you know, just to be expected. This would be the natural progression,
yes.
Eli, you see.
Right? Yeah.
So in other words, they want their national and cultural autonomy within the new states. So mm-hmm. in other words, there's your liberty of, I tell you about the pseudo-liberty. We have our liberty in our nations that is established by, Yahweh's law and by obeying Yahweh's law. But they want their liberties, their culture, their national autonomy to supersede ours.
That's right.
In any of the new states that they are living in, to the extent demanded by the majority of Jews living in those parts, while safeguarding minority rights. You get it, ladies and gentlemen? Yeah. Do you get it? You see, this is democracy we're talking about. This is the Jew equalizing themselves. These are all the sub-races. The Jews are sub-races. The minorities are sub-races. They've come into our nation. We are a nation of men, and all men are equal in our nations, but not all sub-races are equal to us.
Right.
And now they're proving it to you that I'm not lying to you, aren't they, Eli?
Yeah.
Think about what I'm saying. They're demanding their equality. In other words, they're admitting that they're not equal.
Yes.
By demanding that they would be equal, right? See, mm-hmm. if you were already equal, you wouldn't be demanding to be equal, would you? And you wouldn't be demanding that minorities would be equal if they already were equal. See, just use common sense. Mm-hmm. So let's go. Let's move along.
No, there is no common sense.
While safeguarding minority rights and arranging for the Sabbath to be taken into account within the legal framework. Now, there again, right? They want the Saturday to supersede whatever our day is.
Yeah. Well, this is proof that they can never assimilate because they're always demanding their religion be made equal to the existing religion.
And, but it's therefore not even a religion, is it?
No, well, yeah, it's a business. it's presented as a religion.
It's a organization that's pretending to be a religion, and that's the key. See, by saying these things about the Sabbath and everything, they're trying to establish their religion. Look back in one where it said equality for Jews and Judaism, which is supposedly their religion. In all countries of the world, they're demanding this. They're not just demanding
this
in Germany, in this UN treaty, in this League of Nations treaty. They want equality for Jews and the criminal organization.
Okay. Now here's the dilemma. This is the problem here. They're always demanding equality. They're always demanding equality in whichever country they exist. However, they also demand that they be allowed to practice Judaism, which is a supremacist religion. And you cannot have a supremacist religion being given equal treatment to a non-supremacist religion, right? You just can't have it. The supremacist it's religion is always going to win.
It's light and darkness. That's so they should know. See, since they have to demand that this be in all countries of the world, well, then we don't want to agree to that. So they will just have to go live with the sub-races, like I told you.
Yeah.
So in other words, by demanding equality for Jews and their so-called religion, which is a criminal organization under the guise of a religion for the usual reasons, they've admitted they're not equal to all of us.
Exactly.
They have admitted to you, ladies and gentlemen, that they are not equal with the white man.
They're always demanding that their religion be given preference over the indigenous religion. They're always demanding
this. And they've admitted that for the minorities as well, because they're demanding here in three that they be equal too. So what they want to safeguard the minority rights and arranging for the Sabbath to be taken into account within the legal framework.
But
Number four.
And hold on, this begs the question. How does a minority group demand equal status with the majority? What gives them the right?
That doesn't go with minority. In other words, I thought it was the majority goes over the minority
isn't that the way it usually works, the majority rule? No.
Right.
The demands of the minority always take precedence over the majority in a democracy.
Yeah. But how they turn that around is we're all equal, but some of us are more equal than others from Animal Farm. You understand?
Yeah, that's right.
And the same thing as, you know, the majority rules, but that when that really works is when the majority of minorities outdemonstrate, become a minority, and outmob, that's when it works.
That's right. When the minorities become a mob and the majority can't do anything about it anymore, that's when democracy really comes to full bloom, right?
And that proves what? That proves that democracy is not for white people.
There you go.
Plain and simple. So, number four, laying down of such political, administrative, and economic conditions for Palestine.
Oh, now wait a minute. How can you ask the country of Germany to guarantee to the Jewish people that they can have Palestine?
Number one, for all the countries of the world. Eli.
Yeah, how can the Jews demand of all countries that they give them Palestine? What gives them the right to make such a demand?
Well, they couldn't buy it.
Well, actually, they could have.
Then they started a World War One, and they couldn't get it that way either. Oh, yeah. Right? So now this is their attempt to legislate it, to put it into law.
But what this is saying.
In other words, child ritual murder sacrifice has never been legal. They've always done it illegally and been kicked out of the countries 109 times out of the countries of Europe for that, okay, and for usury and other things, right? So in other words, what they did was they came to America and our countries now, and they've made it a worldwide – it's now part of the medical community, and it's a law that you can kill babies.
Yes.
This is what they do. See, another pattern of the enemy?
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to tell the world here, laying down of such political, administrative, and economic conditions for Palestine that its development and an autonomous commonwealth supported by all Jews is ensured.
Right. Okay. So this proves
the Balfour Declaration, didn't they?
Right. This proves that the League of Nations and the Versailles Treaty is all for Jewry. And all other nations are to sacrifice their own interests so that the Jews can accomplish theirs.
And to sacrifice their nation's sovereignty.
That's right.
And to become interdependent so the Jew can act as...
Exploiter.
And middleman.
Yes, exploiter. Right? And lord and dictator. Like ancient Babylon. Like Nimrod's Tower of Babel. Like Nimrod's Tower of Babel.
Yeah, we buy oil from Saudi Arabia, right? We have the most oil of any country in the whole world.
That's right. Why are we buying oil when we have more than anybody else? Why?
Why? it impoverishes us. In other words, all that money you're paying at the pump, you know that, you know, Gaddafi, they were paying about 18 cents a gallon, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what it should be.
Because he wasn't buying it from Jews, from Jewish middlemen, right?
Right. That's why he had to go. That's why he needed democracy in a central bank.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And that's why
you understand perfectly, David. You understand perfectly. I'm glad you do, because so very few people on this planet understand how this works.
Well, look at it this way. The typical American, right, you know, they're spending, let's say, I know that people that drive the big trucks spend thousands of dollars a week in fuel, right?
That's right.
Now, say if you were getting it at 18 cents a gallon. What would be the ramifications of that? And when I say ramifications, I don't mean negative ramifications. I mean, what would be the positive ramifications?
None.
Well, now the price of food could go down, right? Because you wouldn't cost as much to ship it, right?
Right, exactly.
Number two, the average American would
have
more money in
their pocket. But there wouldn't be any positives for the Jew, right? Because
that's correct.
There you go. There you go. The same thing happened in the Philippines not too long ago. When the Philippines, you know, which is a small agricultural, primarily agricultural community, where they trade with each other, a county, one county trade, one little country with another country. But they had their country signed a new deal, the Philippines, where they had to export their produce to other countries and import the very food that they would have imported from the neighboring county. But they couldn't do that anymore. That's what this is. It's because that doesn't involve a Jewish middleman. All of this
and
international
now you
know
why
trade
they take control of the farms.
That's right.
Now you all know of why this, they got the farms away from us, because in a farmer's community, you didn't have to pay any taxes when you traded with your neighbor.
That's right.
Say if your neighbor made ethanol and you could run your truck on ethanol. We talked about that in the Prohibition series.
That's right.
Well, you could buy ethanol for as much as your neighbor would sell it to you for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you made cabbage
for it.
Corn and you traded for it, maybe.
Right. Right.
But the federal government didn't get any taxes from it. See, that's
they never
all
even knew that transaction had taken place.
And they're not supposed to.
That's
the way Yahweh wants it. But
exactly.
That's exactly why the first thing they do when they went into Bolshevik Russia, what did they do with Germany? They divided their land and gave away some of their prime farmland away to France, remember?
Yeah.
So what did they do in America? What are they doing for farms? They're trying to tell people they can't grow peanuts so that you can pay $4, $3 a jar for peanut butter.
Yeah.
When you could be paying maybe 49 cents a jar for peanut butter.
Right. I bet Jimmy Carter doesn't like that.
Well, that's just one example.
Yeah, right.
I mean, on a farm,
crazy.
They're telling, you know, they have no jurisdiction to tell these farmers what to grow. I'm telling you, they don't. That ABC entity was created by the Jews, a farm who owns his own land can grow anything he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are people that will argue and say, oh, no, the federal government has to. They'll tell you if you want to grow something, you have to ask what you can grow. Because if there's too many peanuts being grown, we can't control the price.
That's right.
Yeah, if there's too much corn or whatever it is.
Yes. They must be able to control the distribution.
Right. What's going on with the oil? The same thing.
Right.
If too much oil is coming out of the ground,
and it's
we
always
can get it
Jewish middlemen doing the distributing. But here, let's get to items 5 and 6 because we only have a little bit of time left.
You want me to read it?
Yeah.
Okay. Number 5 is compensation for victims of pogroms by the state concerned.
Okay, so the governments of the world now must... Germany is still not done compensating Jews. After all these years, Germany is still compensating Jews for non-existent pogroms. It never ends, folks. There's never any end to these Jewish demands. Never. There is never any satisfaction of Jewish demands. In fact, if you try to satisfy a Jew, he will just demand more.
Oh, my God. Listen to these demands. Number 6, the setting up of an international.
We don't have enough international committees. No.
Well, this is back then. You know,
yes.
This is just the beginning of all this nonsense,
yes.
Right?
Amen.
So this is the time of Jacob's trouble, and this is what you get. You know what I mean? See, the Jew, when you just mentioned that, the Jew can never stop. It's never good enough. In other words, they had a great scam going here in America and everything with all the things they owned.
Right.
But they had to do 9/11. They have to do, they can't stop anywhere and say, we've got them fooled. We can live on this for 1,000 years at least, and they'll never even know any better.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do 9/11. And that sparked a whole wake up. And now
right.
that they've done this thing with the immigration, that sparked, I mean, now that's like triple wake up.
That got Trump elected. That got Trump elected. See, that was a big mistake. They should have got Hillary elected first. Right?
They can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
See, in other words, the Germans are eating out of garbage cans, right? Now, that shows you that the Jews couldn't stop. Imagine that you can sleep. See, it proves they have no conscience.
That's right.
Imagine you can steal somebody's home or business on pennies for the dollar.
Yeah, and laugh and about it.
You got no problem with that?
Mm-hmm.
No mercy whatsoever.
And the Jews get together and party afterwards and laugh about it. All of the victims they've created. The goyim. They're a sucker born every minute.
Number six, the setting up of an international committee to watch over the enforcement of peace conference principles and decisions that apply to whom?
Yes.
To Jews.
Right. Notice that no other ethnic minority is getting any kind of special consideration like these Jews are.
Although they're in there, but the Jews come first.
Yes.
But notice that the white man has no concern at all whatsoever in there.
It's always white people who are paying for all this and being oppressed by it.
Because they did demand the minorities' rights within these things. But the Jew rights are the first thing they demand. See, what they do is they first make sure that their interests are taken care of. And they sort of hint about the fact that they want the minority. Now, they're not... notice how they're not interested in the Palestinians' rights.
Mm-hmm.
These demands, huh? Notice that,
all.
Ladies and gentlemen?
Yep. Not at all.
See, that's number four. Let me read it to you again so you get it good. Laying down of such political, administrative, and economic conditions for Palestine that its development is as an autonomous commonwealth supported by all Jews is ensured.
Right? It's all about Judaism. It's all about the Jews. The rights and concerns of other people simply do not count.
And this is written in the Versailles Treaty. What does it have to do with the Versailles Treaty?
What does it have to do with World War I?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Well, except for Palestine,
you see. Because in the back.
That's the link, the only link.
Yes.
And, of course, remember what I told you, is in 1917, you know, after the first Tsar, you know, his predecessor in 1815, downed the League of Nations, Rothschild told you, I'll get you and your family. Well, remember, before this was done right here, they had just gotten the Tsar and his family. So that's as soon as they got rid of the Tsar and did the Bolshevik Revolution, when this war ended, now they could set up the League of Nations that they tried to set up in 1815.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key to everything, because this League of Nations is this false peace thing. This is where they become, the whole world becomes international. That's why you didn't realize back in the 80s and the 90s, you kept hearing about global this and global that and globe. And you see icons with swirls going around them. The world is more important than our nation. Yes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Don't love the United States. Love the world. It's bigger. It's, you know, it's what Reagan was saying. All we need is an outside planetary threat to come, you know, a threat from outside in the universe.
Yes.
And then we'd all get together as one.
Yeah.
To fight that force.
Yeah. The insanity.
The Federation, you see.
The insanity of these Jewish claims to equality are incredible because, number one, they never adopt the religion of the country in which they're, you know, immigrating, okay? They practice an extremely hostile religion. What moral obligation do Christians have to accept a people practicing an anti-Christian religion, a religion that absolutely hates Christianity. This is never discussed by the Jews in their demands for equal rights in the countries that they're immigrating into. The fact that they will not assimilate and will not accept Christianity. Don't we have the right to exclude people who refuse to accept our religion? Is that not a right of a nation to reject people who hate our religion?
Of course it is.
Of course it is. But that's never part of the discussion.
We weren't asked.
No, they weren't. The Jews don't ask us if they would we mind if the Jews destroy Christianity? Would we mind? Of course we would.
Did they ask us when they established the ADL?
No, they didn't.
Did they ask us when they established the Federal Reserve Bank?
No, they didn't ask us. Imagine this.
Well, we're going to start a bank because we're going to solve these problems of the bank runs of 1907. And don't worry about it, but we can't be audited.
Yeah.
I mean, right away, if you told me that, I'd say, wait a minute.
Right? Yeah. You're trying to pull a fast one, right?
But the people were smarter then. I don't know how they got away with it by they waited for the senators to go home. I understand how they got away with it. And they had Woodrow Wilson who would sign it into law because Taft would have never signed that. Even if they got it through legitimately, Taft wouldn't have signed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always done by deceit. And this is why the American people did not want the Jews to come to America. The Jews admit the Americans did not want the Jews to come to America, and precisely for the reasons we have just been going over, because of what they did to Germany, what they did to Poland, what they did to Russia. It's really obvious that an objectively reasoned approach to the Jewish question proves that the Jews are a cutthroat, treasonous, subversive minority everywhere they have made their appearance. And they have not changed.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No,
they are too corrupt. When you said the American people didn't want them to come here, well, just remember this one fact. George Washington and Ben Franklin didn't want them to come here, and they warned us about it.
That's right. Yep. But we forget. The Jews never forget. We, unfortunately, are very forgetful, and we always forget the turbulence and chaos the Jews created in the last country they were in. Before being kicked out and coming to our country, right? It's the parable of the snake getting a ride across the river by a duck, right? And just as the duck gets to the other side of the river, the snake bites the duck and kills it. And the duck says, "Why did you bite me?" "Well, I'm a snake. What you expect?" Right? Yeah. We just haven't learned what the Jews are. They are snakes. They are vipers. They cannot behave differently from what they do. You cannot believe their lies. You must go by what they do. By their fruits shall you know them.
They were born spiritually dead from the womb, and their whole purpose is to corrupt mankind.
Yes.
Completely. That's what it is. I had told you that was page 26. I meant page 11 or 12.
Yeah, I found it 12.
I think it was 12. But
yes.
amazing all the admissions and the things you can derive out of an article that they intended to give sympathy to the Jews from. See, they can't – once you know what's going on and you're savvy to it, even when they try to put these positive articles out for they're positive for Jews, you can see right through them.
Yeah, you can see right through it. This is actually kind of funny here. The debate went over points 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 in detail. Dr. Lentz states that since these points had not been sent to him previous to the debate, he could not comment in detail about the ministry's stance of the points. Again, they always slip these things at the last minute so that the negotiators are overwhelmed. However, he does
say...
But
Hillary had the questions... But Hillary had the questions to the debate ahead of time,
that's
remember?
Right.
He's a liar. This guy's a liar, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. He does not say that the reason for the immigration restrictions on Jews was due to the outbreak of typhoid in Poland. The restrictions of the immigration was an issue because of the fact that those Jews had originally been part of Germany in the pre-World War I era and then had been separated as a condition of the Treaty of Versailles. Again, this was all the Jews doing. They're the ones who created all this turmoil to be all this Balkanization was created by the Jews in the first place. So they create the conditions by which they can, it's the Hegelian or actually the Jewish dialectic all over again from one century to another.
And all they care about is the Jews in that in those areas. Yes. They didn't care about the Germans in Danzig or anything. All That's they right. care about is the Jews that were affected by the treaty, you see?
Right. It's only the Jews suffer. Don't you understand, David? Only the Jews suffer.
The rest
of us are their persecutors.
And they are going to suffer. They're going to get
wish. They're going to get their day. All right. Okay, folks, we've run out of time. We've been talking about the Jewish question in Weimar, Germany. I hope you understood what we're trying to tell you today. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you next time.
When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you gotta be tough. You gotta be rough. You gotta shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town.